Hello, we're Wilmot Dixon, and welcome to the third in our 10 Minutes On series, which seeks to delve into key topics surrounding simplifying sustainability in the built environment into easily digestible chunks. During this episode, we're exploring stranded assets, what they are, why they matter, and how they can be avoided. You'll hear about some learnings from recent projects as well, and also common barriers and opportunities. I'm Tom Snee, and to discuss this with me today, we're delighted to be joined by Nick Gibb, who's Deputy Managing Director for the Midlands at Wilmot Dixon, and Rob Fanzil, who is a partner at Cundall. Now, Nick and Rob, thank you very much for joining us. As the title says, we've only got 10 minutes on this, and the clock starts now. So I guess the easy question to start off with, maybe not an easy one, what are stranded assets?
Thank you, Tom. If I start that off, stranded assets are probably best described as those property assets that are no longer fulfilling the requirements, they're no longer favoured by people such as tenants or occupiers of buildings, perhaps because they're falling short of tightening legislation that's starting to increase, such as energy performance. Because of that, they become stranded as those occupiers choose not to renew leases, and then they create a problem for the long-term owners of the buildings as they become stranded as assets themselves.
So why is this then increasingly becoming a talking point? And what's the kind of the detail behind why assets do become stranded?
Perhaps I can pick that one up. EPCs, energy performance certificates, is a measure that the UK government uses to rate buildings. And we now have minimum energy efficiency standards, which means that you legally not allowed to lease out your building if the EPC is worse than an E. And that's going to tighten up in 2027 to a C, and again in 2030 to a B. So those are going to be really hard stops where people are legally not allowed to rent out their buildings if their EPCs are that bad. But beyond that, we've also got the fact that international investors and investors in general, funds in general, have got very serious, or a lot of them are committed to very serious science-based targets, or achieving those science-based targets as part of their ESG strategies and their environmental, social, and governance commitments. And so they are saying that even those EPC standards aren't enough, they want to meet other standards which meet these science-based targets, which typically are running about 7 years ahead of where the government's legislation is. And that's really driving this whole market at the moment. We've also seen evidence that better performing buildings have longer leases, lower vacancies, and are more valuable. And the opposite side of that coin is that poorly performing buildings have shorter leases, lower vacancies, and are less valuable. So this asset stranding methodology is helping owners and asset managers with their asset development strategy, knowing when they should develop a building, how soon they should develop it, when it's going to strand, and take into account what assets they need to have within their portfolios.
Just to build upon that, we all sit here as members of the property industry, but we're also businesses who take up office space. And as Rob has just pointed out there, with the targets that we have as the businesses ourselves, looking at our own responsibilities, there's pressure upon each of us to look at the properties that we're continuing to stay and occupy, to stay within and occupy. So when our property break comes up on this building, I know that I'm going to be asked a lot of questions about, well, how exactly is that going on with it? Are we really into something that's reflecting our values? So if you imagine that conversation that's going on for every occupier in every office space across every city in the UK, you can understand how this issue is starting to not just arise, but become more and more prevalent in the market, meaning that the assets that are performing well are going to be those that are favoured and that everybody's seeking, and the ones that fall behind are going to get left and potentially become stranded, as Rob outlined.
Yeah, and Nick, you also mentioned, it was Rob that mentioned the kind of the investment into buildings as well, and those pension funds with their science-based targets and their ESG policies. They're another big factor that plays into this, aren't they?
Massively. I mean, as a starting point, each of us is probably sitting there looking at our pension as well, and realizing that the pension holders are sitting on these large scale buildings all over the UK. Now, if those buildings are the ones that are performing extremely well and have that longevity of use, that's a good thing. But there's an awful lot that aren't. And straight away, as an investment house, it's going to be a really key question that is starting to be raised about what is the property portfolio that these companies are holding on to, and what's the longevity that's going to come from those in terms of being viable long-term assets.
I think we're seeing a tipping point whereby it started off as a few investors showing an interest in this, and really the hard stop requirements from the government in terms of EPCs have been relatively easy to meet up until now. And so it was only really a trickle of interest in it. But more and more, there's this tidal wave coming where the investors and the funds are committing, and more of them have committed to these science-based targets. And all of a sudden, it's reached a tipping point whereby all properties are just not keeping their value. The easiest option for investors is to ignore B-grade properties or poorly performing properties. And so as the demand for those properties drops, so the property prices drop, and those properties just got stranded. Nobody wants to rent them. Nobody wants to buy them. They just become a liability rather than an asset.
So, I mean, the million-dollar question: how can this situation be resolved? What are the steps that need to be taken to kind of get into a position where we get a solution to this?
I mean, starting from just a quick overview in terms of the properties themselves, you know, it's not that we are just going to throw away all of the old properties by any means. It's a reasoned overview of the type of properties that are sitting there that are starting to struggle, looking at how they're built, what they're made out of, and what the business case is to bring them back into good long-term use. Looking at a number of methods. I'm sure Rob will come in with some good quality examples.
Yes, so I mean, I mentioned earlier that the investors are running about 7 years ahead of where the legislative requirements are. So you can see how quickly you have to improve your property in order to stay investable. We've worked out, we've used a seven-step process to improving an old property or to looking at how you improve it. Four of those steps relate to operational energy. Two of them relate to whole life and embedded carbon, and then one relates to public disclosure. So, you know, of those four steps, the first step is improving your mechanical and electrical systems within the building, your lighting, your pumps and fans and so on, getting those to be efficient. And that typically gives you one EPC band. So if you're running at if your property is currently a poorly performing E, so it's only just investable at the moment, by improving your MEP systems, you can perhaps push that up one EPC band into a good E or perhaps a bad D. Beyond that, and that gives you about, it meets your current requirements of being an E. You've got 3.5 years to get to an EPC C. If you think that starting work now, you'll only really be, well, it's only 3.5 years until the requirement for an EPC C is there. And it's unlikely that purely just upgrading your EPC, your MEP systems is going to meet your requirements. It could be, you might just be able to do it with just upgrading your lighting and your fans and so on. But for most properties, you might be at this stage needing a heat pump, taking out your gas-fired boilers and putting in heat pumps in order to get over that threshold in 3.5 years and be able to release your property out. And just bear in mind that investors want you to be 7 years ahead of these minimum targets that I'm talking about. You've got 6 years left till you need to be at a grade B, an EPC grade B. And it's very unlikely that you can get to a B without doing something else on your building, which is either going to be improving your facade, your windows, the insulation levels of your building, or it might be adding photovoltaics or renewable energy to your buildings, or a combination of both of those. But you're unlikely to get a B without doing one of those two. You might in extreme cases be able to, but it's really touch and go as to whether you can get to a B without those extra interventions. And then beyond that, of course, there's no legislative requirement to go further than a B, but investors are looking for, as I say, 7 years ahead of that. And typically for a building to be investable, be more than, say, 10 years ahead, it really needs to be aiming at an EPC A. And that's related also to the kilowatt hours of energy that you'll be using. And that's going to require probably interventions to both your facade and, if your building's low enough, putting a renewable energy on the roof or something like that. But you'll probably almost certainly have to deal with your facade within 10 years.
And this is very much spreadsheet driven. This is people looking at the fundamentals of the development appraisals, taking an individual building, understanding the criteria, as Rob has just explained there, about the severity to which you want to invest in the future, but also understanding the length of time that you gain from the increased investment that you put into it. We've seen examples of this where actually buildings are being stripped back to bare frame to undertake the complete amount of work that Rob's just outlined there. But what you actually gain from that then is a building that has that longevity, is hitting EPC A, is coming up to all of the latest modern standards, and actually on the right buildings with the right building type that sits behind it. It's still working very favorably from a development appraisal compared to a knockdown rebuild. So this is something that has got a lot of future in the market. It's things that obviously the analysis needs to be done on individual buildings to understand those criteria. But on the right buildings, this is a very effective way of creating what is essentially new quality standard space.
That's right. And I want to also just point out that investors require some evidence. It's not good enough to say, oh, we think this building's quite energy efficient. And if they're looking for something that's beyond an EPC requirement, you have to have another sort of metric, another way of proving that the building is energy efficient. Most of the international investors don't really recognize the UK-based system, or they don't really understand the UK-based system of EPC ratings. They look at it in terms of kilowatt hours. So international investors from the USA or wherever it is will look at kilowatt hours. And the most useful method of determining, or the simplest method of determining the kilowatt hours of a building, is to actually measure the meters when the building's occupied. But of course, the investors want to know in advance, when you're doing the work before it's occupied, what that, how many kilowatt hours it's likely to use. And the systems that are used for that, in the system that seems to be preeminent in the market at the moment, it's called the NABERS system. So NABERS 4.5-star building. There's a scale rating from 4 to 6 stars that you can get for your building. A 4.5-star building is typically investable up to 2030, and but you need to get to a 5-star building to be investable up to 2037, and probably 5.5-star to go beyond that. And that seems to be emerging as a new metric for institutional investors who want to go further than the EPC standard.
And we've gone ever so slightly over our time, but I'm really interested in this topic. And I was reading up on it the other night, and Brindley Place jumped out at me as a really good example of how this can be done. Nick, do you mind just running through what happened there briefly, just so we can get a bit of an example and case study of how it can work well?
Certainly. And this is really a good example of a building that's been taken back to its sort of skeleton, if you like, by realizing that that was a well-built building, a good frame that existed there. This is a building that's about 212,000 square feet over 12 floors that was stripped all the way back to its frame. So from the scenarios that Rob pointed out there, this is taking it back to look at every fundamental system. So you still keep the foundations, you keep the frame of the building, but you replace pretty much everything else that sits within it. As a result of that, you're coming up with a building here which has a fantastic EPC rating, a huge amount of savings on embodied carbon of around 60% over a 60-year life cycle assessment, and really looking at this fabric-first approach to create the energy efficiency and build it in. An EPC A rating, BREEAM excellent, and a type of new space, I guess, that's representative of a new build. So to actually have the ability to do that on an existing building and to make the development appraisals stack up and show that that's a really good way of creating this space compared to having a fundamental new build is really important. And it's probably representative of a lot of the stock that we see around the cities. So it does show that there's a good future market in this, and we haven't got to sort of run away from this topic. It's about how we embrace it, how we understand the type of buildings we're dealing with, and really work out what that formula looks like to bring them forward into the new future of their life.
Well, Nick and Rob, thank you very much for your time today. And thank you all for tuning in. We hope you found this episode informative, and we're looking forward to welcoming you back next month.